Ladies and gentlemen, a week's gone by, a lot's gone on, which means it's time to tune in and listen to the ramblings of a diehard sports fan with Eli Gray. Ladies and gentlemen, a week's gone by, a lot's gone on, which means it's time to tune in and listen to the ramblings of a diehard sports fan with Eli Gray.
Gentlemen, it's that time of the week, Wednesday night here. It's Eli and Izzy with Ramblings of a Diehard Sports Fan. We will start this week off talking about the fight. Saturday night, pay-per-view, big match, Anderson Silva versus Weidman in what was a highly touted match. A lot of people predicting going into it that Silva would lose Vegas. That was the closest line spread Vegas had for Silva in a long, long time. Silva defending champ for years on end. It didn't look like this guy would go down. And a highly, highly touted match, pay-per-view, everyone in attendance in Vegas. And as you all know, or if you haven't watched, Silva spent his time just joking around, showboating, daring Weidman to knock him out, and that's precisely what Weidman did. Is, what do you think of the match?
Well, you pretty much summed it up very simply. Anderson Silva has been the champion at that particular weight division for many, many years. He had not lost in forever, and he's arguably, as people will tell you, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, MMA fighter of all time. I do believe that that is an argument, as I see George St. Pierre as possibly the greatest fighter of all time, but that's in a different weight class. The fact of the matter is that in the sport of MMA, regardless of how talented and how amazing a fighter you are and how great your Muay Thai or your Jiu-Jitsu or your ground and pound game is, you cannot showboat. You can't drop your hands for a second, especially when the guy coming in to face you is pretty much, as far as rankings, the best possible matchup for him that he'd had in years. Weidman was, the predictions were pretty much correct. And Weidman was supposed to, Vegas claimed that he was going to rough him up. He was going to rough up Silva. Now, if you drop your hands, it doesn't matter if it's a giant versus a midget. It doesn't matter really who is fighting in that situation. But if you disrespect the guy and you drop your hands and the guy has a semi-decent hook, you're going to get knocked out. I don't care how strong your jaw is. But, in fact, to prove the point, a number of years back there was a match, well, not that he disrespected him, but there was a match between George St. Pierre and Matt Serra of Long Island approximately 4 to 5 years ago. And George St. Pierre had not lost in forever. It turns out that that match, St. Pierre slipped slightly and Serra caught him with a right hook. Now, St. Pierre is arguably the best athlete that MMA has ever seen. And Matt Serra, not to knock him, but we're talking about a guy that's roughly 5'5", 5'6". He didn't have any advantage possible in that match. But because of a tiny tactical mistake by George St. Pierre, Matt Serra caught him with one overhand right, dropped him, and basically knocked him out. And he took the title from him. And St. Pierre was adamant. He said, absolutely not. That was a mistake. I will win that title back. Give me the opportunity to fight him. That being said, he ended up having to defend his title against George St. Pierre, and St. Pierre knocked him out and won the title back, and he has held it pretty much ever since. The beauty of MMA is that no matter what the numbers are, I guess the old corny saying is everyone has a fighting chance. If you have the ability to punch, then you have the ability to win. It doesn't matter what the odds are. Now, that being said, I would definitely not tell you to bet against a 10-to-1 favorite. That's ridiculous. But when you have a fighting shot, pun intended, you can win. It doesn't matter what the situation is. And Silva got what he deserved, and I was happy to see that.
Yeah, and the real interesting thing to me was the reaction afterwards, the interview afterwards by Joe Rogan, who does that phenomenally, the announcing and the post-fight interviews for the UFC fights, the pay-per-view fights, the reaction by Silva afterwards, where it almost, he didn't sound coherent in any way, shape, or form. The question is, was that what he, you know, what he was really thinking? Was he still jarred from the loss? Dana White came out afterwards saying that there will be a rematch with Weidman and Silva, even though Silva seemed to indicate otherwise in the post-fight reaction. But he was just very incoherent. He didn't answer the question at all. Rogan asked him, do you regret the showboating? You know, and what does Silva say? Silva doesn't even acknowledge the question. He just goes right on to the, you know, how he's, it almost sounded like he was happy that he lost, you know, that's, it was very weird to listen to him talk incoherently, just talking about, you know, his chances in America and how Weidman is the champion now and, you know, how he's retired. I couldn't, and it was just the post-match reaction was weird. And now it's even weirder because Dana White is coming out and saying that there will be a rematch, you know, as was reported going into the match, was that if somehow, as happened, Silva knocks out, or Silva got knocked out or lost, and he got knocked out, there would be an immediate rematch, or, you know, not immediate, but the next match that these two had would be a rematch, and, you know, obviously that would get a huge TV rating, but it'll be interesting to see how this plays out, because Silva post-match said he doesn't want a rematch. Weidman's got the title, and he's fine with that. And UFC, obviously, is not going to have Silva fight in anything other than a rematch with him because, you know, that's what everyone wants to see.
Well, I completely agree as far as them having a rematch. That's not even a question, and it's proven in this sport that two things motivate a fighter, the first of which is obviously the notoriety, knowing that you have a great record and that, you know, you're beating your opponent. The second is the obvious, which is the financial aspect. And let's be honest, Zuffa, which is the company that owns the UFC and partially owned by Dana White, they have a lot of money. They are a $1 billion industry. So if they want to pay you, and they know that a Weidman-Silva fight would literally, I mean, it would be off the charts. And the great thing about MMA is that it's unfortunate on one end because boxing, for so many years, boxing was this amazing spectacle. And at this point in time, it's really in the garbage. And MMA sort of, and this happened as of a couple of years ago, MMA sort of overtook the boxing world. So a lot of the people, even the purists who didn't believe in Muay Thai and Jiu-Jitsu, are now sort of they're gravitating toward the MMA sport because boxing's dead. So as far as viewers, it's massive. MMA is huge. It's the biggest it's ever been. It's obviously, there's a matter of when it's going to be legalized in the state of New York. For years I've been wanting it, obviously. It hasn't happened. The closest you can really go is Jersey if you want to see a fight out in Rutherford. But again, as far as Silva goes, as far as his incoherence, let's face it, the guy got knocked out. The guy got punched in the face. So for the first 10-15 minutes after that knockout, and we're not even assuming he had a concussion, but let's just go ahead and say maybe it knocked a couple of screws loose. So it would make sense that what he was talking about didn't make sense. But Dana White made it clear there will be a rematch. And I guarantee you that if Silva doesn't want the rematch, they're going to throw enough money at him or he's going to say, you know what, I'm going to do it. Because the truth is, at this point in this weight class, it's really, Silva's really the best possible opponent because he held the title for so long. He is going to be the person to fight Weidman. Now, I'll make a quick point. As far as weight classes go, I've been wanting to see a fight between John Bones Jones. I'm not sure if you've seen most of his fights. I'm sure you've seen a couple. Johnny Bones Jones, athletically, him and George St. Pierre are freaks of nature. They're unbelievable fighters. Jones has not lost a fight in his pro MMA career, there was officially a no contest because he elbowed a fighter a couple of years ago in the head while he was on the ground. That is legal in Japan and in other countries, but not legal in the UFC and in the U.S. John Jones is a freak of nature, and forever they've been trying to get a fight between Anderson Silva and John Jones. But the fact that Silva lost this past fight will sort of cool that down. If Anderson Silva won this fight, you could bet that they would be talking Johnny Bones Jones and Anderson Silva either fighting at 180 or at 205. That's honestly the fight that I would love to see.
Now it's interesting because I've only started watching MMA about 6 months ago. You know, the pay-per-view matches are what I watch, the big matches. And those two names that you just mentioned are the matches that really I watched and said, holy crap, this stuff is fun to watch. Yes, it's still grotesque to me in a way, but watching those guys is fun. You know, the Silvas, the Joneses, the GSP, you know, those guys are great to watch, and those are what really turned it for me. Now, you know what really bothered me after the match, and it goes into the talk of all sports in general, is immediately everyone jumping on the, he threw the fight, they threw the fight to, you know, why do we have to do that for everything? You know, not everything is thrown, is a fix, is, you know, it bothers me that that's the first reaction of a lot of people, is that the fix is in, it was thrown, it was this. I mean, it's just ridiculous talk to me.
They're idiots. They're flat-out idiots. There's a couple of aspects that people can look at. The first of which is if the average idiot says he threw the fight, what is his reasoning for it? Well, he dropped his hands. Anyone that has watched Anderson Silva fight over the last 5 years,
he's done this before.
Dances around, he prances around, he toys with the fighter. Everybody, this started with
The point was made is that we love him doing that when he comes out winning, but when he does it and he loses doing that, then it's everyone the case. It's all, once again, this almost revisionist history, you know, the hindsight bias of we love it when it's going on and the results are what we want, but when it happens and the results are not what we want, we completely switch our opinions on the matter.
It's idiotic.
It's absolutely idiotic.
And the fact of the matter is that Weidman caught him. He caught him with a punch, and that's it. And it proves the point. Every fighter has a fighter's chance if you have the ability to throw a punch and connect with a guy's jaw, his temple, or his kidney, any spot in his body that can potentially cause him to collapse. That is a fact.
Yes, sir. Well, I completely agree. We'll take a quick commercial break. On the other end, we'll be joined by the founders of a very fascinating new website, replyall.me. We will talk to them about their website right after these commercial words.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Every year you assemble your closest friends to prepare for another season in the knockdown, drag-out world of make-believe football.
4 minutes.
You were born with the one skill every manager needs to play fantasy football. Absolutely no skill playing real football.
Not so good at catching.
Imaginary catches. Imaginary touchdowns. Next up, an imaginary score with an imaginary woman.
Good imagination.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, oh Swami of the sidelines. You may come in dead last, but you're always first with us.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri. Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius. Today we salute you, Mr. Golf Tournament Quiet Sign Holder Upper.
Mr. Golf Tournament Quiet Sign Holder Upper.
Boldly you patrol the line between order and anarchy, armed with only your wits, your resolve, and your tiny cardboard sign stapled to a stick.
Action! actually I glued it on.
You protect professional golfers from what they fear most. Idle chit-chat 200 yards away.
Stop breathing so loud now.
Because you know there's one thing this spectator sport could really do without. Spectators.
Get them out.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, oh, salt another shush. We'll keep singing your praises as long as you keep telling us to shut up.
Mr. Carlson, McQuack, Donald Rubber.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Black is back, and only at Quiznos. It's the Black Angus on Rosemary Parmesan. Quality, thick sliced Black Angus steak topped with melted mozzarella and cheddar. Try it. You're gonna like it. Quiznos. Toasty.
How do you make a tasty sub? There's the Quiznos way, and there's Wrong Way.
Hello.
Quiznos uses meat sliced fresh daily.
Zach's here too.
Wrong Way uses shingle-packed meats in a bag. Quiznos uses bread made especially for toasting. At Wrong Way. And now, fresh out of the Quiznos oven is our new peppercorn parmesan turkey with bacon sub. Only $3.49 for a... What the? For a limited time only at Quiznos.
Alrighty, we're back. Thank you all for tuning in. Once again, the call-in number is 347-637-2306 to join in on the discussion. We started off with some MMA stuff. We might talk about that a little bit later. But right now, we are joined by the founders of a new website, replyall.me, Zach Abramowitz and Ari Gold. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing great.
Great as well. Right, so, thanks so much for having us on.
I guess, Zach, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about the new site and what the intention is with it.
Sure. The basic concept of replyall.me is to give everyone a really easy way to have their own show. Now, the shows are written. They're not audio. But the kind of way we thought about this whole idea to begin with was that Ari and I used to sit at our desks at our various jobs, and we would email each other back and forth every day, and we'd have these epic conversations about all things, sports, politics, pop culture. And at some point we realized, hey, look, we're having these conversations about email, and no one's listening to us. But we're doing it almost as if it's our own little show. What if we could do this in a way where we can create an audience? So that's what replyall.me really is. It's a way to sort of go back and forth with someone on the internet in a way where anyone can see you, but you've got a little bit of more control of who's in the conversation. It's you and your co-hosts.
So okay. Basically, to understand it, it's kind of like if you compare it to sort of a snake draft. If let's say you're doing a fantasy football draft and you sort of you had like the opportunity to draft 14 hours later or something like that, where you don't have to reply that second, but you can continue on the conversation at any time, sort of to say, as I understand.
Exactly. Like the name Reply All indicates, it's the same way. You know, we always had our email chains. Not everybody is in a real-time chat room setting. It's just when you get, not necessarily get around to it, but at the flow of the conversation ebbs and flows like an email chain. So it's not. It's not a chat room, and it creates a different dynamic, too, because it's not you have time to kind of think of your response the way, again, you would when you craft an email. Just the type of language and the type of conversation is different, when you have some thought to it rather than an IM conversation.
Now, right. Is there any sort of restrictions on what you guys are letting go up? Or
no.
Is it sports only? Is it...
No, it really is in that sense. It's a platform for anyone to come on there and start their own, whatever it is they want to talk about. And we encourage that. The conversations that you see on the main site, replyall.me, are just the ones that are the most popular. But really, this is not about writing for replyall.me. We want to put replyall.me out there so that anyone can come and sort of create their own. So that everyone who creates their own show will have their own unique address. For instance, I do a show called Zach Talks, where I interview sort of interesting people that I've met over the course of starting Reply All. You know, and those are some radio hosts and some bloggers, We even had Bill James, the big sabermetrics guru, on there recently to talk about his book, Popular Crime. And that replyall.me is replyall.me/ZachTalks. And that's my personal page, and that's got all the different conversations I've had. And you can kind of see it's almost like my portfolio of conversations. And each one of those I kind of consider its own episode or its own show.
Now, are you guys web only for now, or what are you going to have apps for this, or?
Sure. I mean, right now we are web only. There is this adage in startup world to sort of first release the what's called the MVP, the minimum viable product, the sort of the leanest product possible, just to see if there's a market for it. Once you kind of prove that market, which I think we're starting to see, you know, really where our target market lies and really who enjoys using replyall the most, then you sort of build the app afterwards to go with it. But you don't want to spend the money on an app unless you're really sure you've got a great idea. And you want to make sure that people really love something before you go on building the app.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm actually on the website right now. I really love the layout. I like what you guys did over there. It says the Yoni and Yoni. It's got like that radio logo where it's not showing the title of it. The page looks really nice. I see on the bottom you have it's not just sports. It's a bunch of different things over here. Something on The Bachelorette for people who are interested in that. You also have, as I see, something on NBA Junkies, Zach Talks. So there's definitely different categories and different options. It looks really interesting. I'm certainly going to check it out.
And we've got a lot of users already. We've got certainly a lot of sports talk, but also a lot of television. You know, people the morning after want to talk about the show. And, again, kind of forming your own platform, your own space to talk about, almost like, again, your own blog. And I'm just going to say, like, what you guys are doing is again, it's certainly commendable. Like, it's not easy to do your own show and to make it happen, right? And what you guys put in, the commitment you put into making it happen, is not something everybody can do. And when you have, when you want to have your own blog, or you want to have your own place to opine, one of the ways that also makes it easier is by doing it with someone else. So, you know, you're not doing a blog by yourself where you have to create content on a blank page every day. Even you probably see now, Eli, with Izzy, who came on more recently as a co-host, just the way to generate conversation, the way to generate the flow is easier when you're not doing it solo. And I think obviously the most prominent, you know, radio shows that we you think of sports radio, you think of Mike and Mike, you think of Kornheiser and Robot, and, like, that dialogue and that camaraderie, you know, creates an element of content that is more dynamic and more interesting to read. And there's that group element to it, that collaborative element to it, that really makes this content different than what you're able to create by yourself or other platforms that are currently available.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. So, like, when you guys have, like, Zach, when you went on with, Rivers McCown of Football Outsiders, were you guys doing that in live time, or did it take place over a few days? Like, when you're trying to set up these things,
each one of them has worked a little bit different. In the case of – they all develop live, meaning when Rivers McCown from Football Outsiders, who was just on with me yesterday, when he comes on there and does the show, he's responding and it's developing live just the same way it would if you were emailing back and forth with a friend, right? The difference is that now, 1,000 or so people might be able to see that conversation – I might be able to follow that conversation all at once as it's developing, which really adds a certain excitement to it. But every conversation is a little bit different, meaning Rivers and I did that in one day. The conversation with Bill James, on the other hand, lasted, I think, 2 or 3 days.
No, it's definitely a very fascinating new platform. And for all you listening, to check it out, you just go to replyall.me. It's very easy to sign up. You have different settings for your notifications on how you want to be notified about how your conversations are going. And as we've mentioned, you can start it on any of the different topics. And, it's definitely, you see, like, on the front page that I just, you know, if you pull it up, you've got a wide range, as Izzy mentioned. You got NBA talk, different shows, some radio shows. Ari, who's moving to the Holy Land, Israel, soon, has started a little conversation there about that. So it really does run the gamut of all over the place. And while we got you, I thank you guys for coming on. Let's talk. I know you guys are both NBA fans, so let's talk. You know, it's NBA all season. A bunch of teams made some big moves, but of course, as we are wont to do, no one's content with just looking at next season. We got to think big, big, big picture, and the talk is LeBron James leaving Miami. And here's the thing. I want to throw my opinion out there and see where you guys disagree with me. Everyone is taking this assumption that LeBron is going to opt out, which probably will, but he's going to leave and really going to seriously consider other places. But my question is, what has given that indication of him doing so? He came to Miami stating very clearly, taking less money to do so, to compete and put himself in a position to win a championship every year, which they have done. They won. They went to the finals in the first year. They won it the last 2 years in a row. So unless the team tanks drastically, why is everyone assuming that he is going someplace?
You got to go first as a Miami fan.
Yeah, I mean, he picked one of Zach's favorite topics in LeBron James in general. He's a huge, I would sarcastically say fan, but he's a pretty big hater on LeBron James, and me being from Miami, I'm a pretty big fan. So that generally generates some pretty interesting conversation as well. It's interesting because I think the only thing, it just makes a lot of sense for LeBron James to then, you know, kind of move on, because he does have some sense of a stigma to his career arc where he caused a lot of backlash when he left Cleveland. And although I think for the large majority, and this is really the large majority, Zach is really in the small minority, if that's not redundant enough, of people who still hate LeBron even after winning. Usually,
right, and I have to bump in there, Ari, and because I do love this topic, and I have to say that after watching this last finals, even though I thought the Heat sort of skated by with a victory, I looked at them as stealing it more than anything. When you're watching LeBron on the court, it's so obvious how much bigger, stronger, and faster he is than anyone in the NBA. And I've kind of gotten to this point where it seems like no matter how good, how big, how devastating LeBron is, everyone's always going to say the one thing about him. Well, he's not Michael Jordan. So I've got a crazy idea for what LeBron James should do next season. He should leave Miami, but he shouldn't just leave Miami. He should leave the NBA and go to the NFL. I used to joke about this, but I'm now convinced that there is not a single defensive back who could move with LeBron. There's no one as fast as him in the NFL. There's no one as big as him and strong. That combination simply doesn't exist. If LeBron wants to outdo Michael Jordan, he's not going to do it on the basketball court. So outdo him by doing the one thing that MJ failed to do, which was be a two-sport player. I think LeBron is a wide receiver tight end combo is simply unguardable in the NFL, and I think it would make him a true global brand, an icon, and he would officially go down as the best athlete of all time.
I understand what you're saying. I hear it, and it makes some kind of sense, but then think about it from this perspective.
I think it makes sense to people who are on LSD most. But
if you want to trip, you know, bulls or something, then great. But think about it like this. Does LeBron have to prove to everybody else that he is either as good or better than LeBron James? And anyways, who gives a damn? He doesn't have to prove anything. The guy's won his championships. Going to another sport, it sounds nice. It sounds great, a la Bo Jackson. It would be great to see LeBron suit up, play tight end for my New York Giants. I would dream of that. But the fact is that he's great at what he does. He is, like you said, he's a freak of nature physically. Nobody can guard him anywhere. He could continue doing what he's doing, and regardless, there's always going to be haters. Let's face it, he's not going to be Michael Jordan because Michael Jordan was his own kind of player. LeBron is a different kind of freak. He's a different kind of player. He's amazing, but there will always be haters in any sport, in any situation. LeBron is receiving that vitriol because of the fact that he left Cleveland. It stems from that. That's really what it comes down to. He has nothing to prove anymore to anybody. He's won his two championships. He didn't win the 5 or 6 that he claimed, but then again, he's only been on the team 3 years, and he went to the finals all 3 times. What does he have to prove? I used to be a hater. I shut my mouth up. He won this championship. I shut my mouth. The guy is greatness. Modern-day Jordan.
really what it stems from is the fact that he didn't go to your team. You know, nobody does really cares if he left Cleveland. As long as he went to their team, they're happy. But, Eli, let me ask you this, though. He went to Miami with the stated purpose, right, obviously, of winning championships. That's how he's going to make his name. That's how he's going to finally put everybody, all the critics to rest, is by winning championships. But who's to say that at the end of next season, if D-Wade continues to decline, you know, physically, and Chris Bosh doesn't step up in that role, who's to say that going to play with Kyrie Irving and Andrew Bynum might not be even a better option?
Well, first of all, here's the thing. Other than Kyrie Irving, who also has had injury problems, you know, not to the extent of Wade because he's much younger, but, you know, Cleveland did dump on him pretty bad, you know, and let's not take, you know, that I'm sure push came to shove that wouldn't really make much of a difference, but he's got everything going for him in Miami. And while everyone talks about the decline of D. Wade, remember, when they went on that win streak, he was phenomenal. He's 24, you know, 24 points. He's getting rebounds. He's still moving. He's still, you know, getting his assists. You know, people, the demise of Dwayne Wade, you know, people are overstating it. In the playoffs, you know, he did slow down. Injury showed a little. But, you know, what's to say? Why are you assuming that you're getting the playoff Dwayne Wade and not the regular season Dwayne Wade? And LeBron, even in Miami, has shown that he could take that team on his own. Now, I honestly believe there. I'm not saying that, you know, Cleveland might be an option. He might go back to Cleveland. The talk of him going to the Lakers, I think there is no way in hell he goes to L.A. Because let's remember, he signed with Miami, and it was a circus that first year with the media, and he hated it. I mean, he, you know, he was very politically correct with it, and he told the line finally with it, but he hated it. The whole team hated it. Could you imagine the media circus that would happen if he goes to L.A.? You think he's going to get himself back into that to be on a team, not only where the media circus follows him and, you know, having to explain why he went to L.A. and all that stuff, but also being in the shadows of Kobe? Because, you know, even if he goes there, I'm not saying playing-wise, but, you know, the Lakers will definitely, you know, everyone will be a Kobe. He'll have to be playing with an aging Kobe. So I don't get at all the talk of him going, you know, opting out and going to L.A. And, you know, to me right now, I see LeBron ending his career in Cleveland maybe. I just don't see him after this year opting out and not staying in Miami, because Miami offers him the best options all the way around. Because last contract is well known, but people, you know, downplay it. He took less money. You know, this next contract will be the time for him to cash in, and Miami, under the Bird rules, could offer him the most amount of money to stay. You'll have a solid cast with Bosh and Wade, who they both have said they want to end their careers in Miami. And LeBron, to everything he said in the public, has basically said the same thing. He's, you know, he didn't say that he's definitely coming back. He didn't say he's definitely not coming back. But he said if the plan stays the same, he doesn't see a reason that, you know, I forget his exact wording, but basically that he doesn't see a reason that he would go. So, I mean,
Can't the Heat trade Dwayne Wade already? Why are they holding on to the guy? I get, you're right. Yeah, this is not like the demise is a little overrated. But, A, his Q rating has gone way down. He was very small. I mean, I actually thought LeBron came across very well in the finals and the playoffs in general, where it felt like Dwayne Wade's people were leaking stories about rifts, and I don't know. There's something to me. I say you get your value for Dwayne Wade. Keep LeBron, keep Bosh even, but see if you can trade Wade to get some assets.
That's just crazy talk. I mean, Wade, you know, first of all, here's the thing that everyone keeps forgetting, especially when they were talking, you know, everyone's been mentioning trade Bosh. Here's the thing that it hasn't been explicitly stated, but you read between the lines. These three guys came to Miami together. They made a decision to sign together. You know, so no matter how crappy they're all playing, LeBron is the guy that you want to keep happy. They get along very well, even though they've had some public spats. You know, everything they say in public, they are good friends. They hang out all the time together. Unless LeBron goes to Riley and says explicitly, I want Dwayne Wade out, I want Chris Bosh out, those guys are staying even if they don't play a single minute on the floor. So everyone keeps forgetting that element of it when you say trade Wade, trade Bosch, where's LeBron going? It was all three of them together, and the team has a very clear blueprint of what they want to do. Riley's gotten veterans to buy in for less money and come and play with this team, and they'll be able to do that as long as you have this core. No other team is getting players to do that. The Knicks, when they got their attempt at a big three, you know, minus one, you know, they brought in Stoudemire, you bring in Melo, you fill in pieces, but you still didn't have veterans who were could start on a lot of teams but came to Miami to be a bench player. We're taking less money to do so. You don't see that with any other team, even who have three superstars. No one's doing that for the Nets. No one did that for the Knicks. The Lakers players aren't doing it. So the blueprint that Miami's taken to the final 3 years in a row, winning two of those, you know, people are taking the facts and just like pushing them to the side because it doesn't fit into the agenda and the discussion that I want to talk. But everything, when you look at it on the face, points exactly the opposite of what everyone's assuming. I mean, you know, how? What indication is there, Mr. Abramowitz, that it's going? It needs to be changed up. Why?
Look, here's why. Because, and I want to borrow something that I heard from my old boss, Max Kellerman. Max Kellerman compared LeBron to Mike Tyson. He said that when you used to watch Mike Tyson fight, every time you watched him fight, you said, of course Mike Tyson is going to win. He's going to kill the other guy, literally kill him. And then Mike Tyson would lose. You'd go, oh, fluke. And then he'd lose again. You'd say, fluke. And here's the thing with LeBron. When you watch LeBron play, don't you kind of wonder how the other team is keeping up at all? Like, how are the games ever close? He's so much better than any other athlete on the planet today. The games shouldn't be close. So if I look at it and I say, wow, the Heat barely escaped Indiana and barely escaped the Spurs series. Like, why did those go to seven games? I think there's something broken if the Heat aren't sweeping the season in the playoffs. LeBron is that good.
But that's unrealistic. That, you know, the other teams have talent. They are good teams. Even Jordan in his days were not, you know, except for the rare sweep, you know, they were not doing it. It's the NBA playoffs. You're still dealing with a high level of competition. To sit there and pontificate about how they should be sweeping and anything less is a disappointment. Well, the players themselves have said to it, it's the NBA playoffs. You know, you're in La La Land if you think that's what should be happening.
Sure, but I mean, do we remember the Shaq Lakers where you watch Shaq and you're like, oh, that guy's better than everyone in the league. And then they almost, did they sweep? I can't even remember. Did they actually sweep the playoffs that year? They got awfully close.
No, it was one year where they came awfully close, but, you know, that's a fluke. That is the fluke. You've never seen that happen before, even with the other great players. So that's what you look at and say, fluke. That's the one thing that is a fluke, in that a team does not sweep through the playoffs. You look at what Miami did in the first round against a bad Milwaukee team, and Miami, you know, they were also there playing midseason mode at times where it didn't even look like they were turning it on, and then it wasn't a series. They swept them. So other than that, you know, when you have a average team coming against them in the playoffs, they will sweep them. But the other teams, you're talking about good NBA teams. You know, the Indiana Pacers have had a size advantage over them. They were a good team. Even the Bulls, I mean, the second round, Miami lost that one game. And a lot of that, I think, is attributable to the fact that they had to sit for a week and a half and not play. But the other four games right after that, Miami won handily.
Why is it that Miami doesn't have, like, a big guy? Isn't there some, like, huge, hairy guy in, like, Spain or Eastern Europe they could just bring in? Like, why is there all of a sudden, like, no one who's 7 feet tall?
It is kind of mind-boggling that like, you know, they can't find that.
Like, when I used to go to basketball games as a kid, it looked like everyone was 7 feet tall. Where are all the seven-footers? Are they eating, like, gluten? What's going on?
Now, Izzy, let's get you back in. There's talk, I just read on Pro Basketball Talk, that Melo is very discontent with the Knicks, and LA is going to go after him too. Do you see Melo leaving the Knicks?
Do I see him leaving the Knicks? At this point, I honestly don't give a damn if he leaves the Knicks or if he sticks around with them. At this point, the Knicks are basically a one sort of trick pony. It's basically get the ball to Carmelo, let him work off the dribble, and just isolation, and everybody stands around. You set the wing up with three-point shooters, and that's it, and we don't play any defense. Carmelo Anthony can go wherever he wants. I don't much care. They already put all that money into J.R. Smith, which I still believe they're going to end up trading him anyway at some point during the middle of the season. But it's just the whole dynamic of the Knicks right now is it's a joke. I can't really look at what they've done in the offseason already. They're bringing Bargnani, which is mind-boggling because he's been nothing but a bust. He's been nothing. He's been less than nothing. They were talking about bringing in Brand, who's slower than molasses. That would screw the team up even worse. So where are they really going? Is this a la Isaiah Thomas? I mean, who is running the show? Do whatever you have to do. And, oh, my, I don't even know what to say. It's a joke. This is basically the Knicks of old. Let Carmelo Anthony go wherever the hell he wants. Let him take his drama. Just to make a quick point, before Carmelo came to the Knicks, before they traded, the Knicks traded away Chandler, Timofey Mozgarbidge, what's called Wilson Chandler. Amari Stoudemire was like third in the league in points. I mean, granted, it was only for like a little more than half of the season, but he was playing ridiculously well with the spacing. I mean, the team looked phenomenal. And then they traded away everybody and pretty much brought in Melo, and Melo is Melo. But the Knicks, Melo will never win a championship. He's not a championship caliber player. He's a scorer. He's arguably the best scorer in the NBA. He's a pure shooter, but the guy is not a winner. And he's not going to win anywhere. I don't believe he's a winner.
Yeah, no, it's definitely interesting, you know, how it's all going to play off. And once again, we'd like to thank Zach and Ari from replyall.me for joining us. We'll go to a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Not satisfied with standard souvenir distribution, you created a device with enough kick to dislocate a mascot's shoulder.
Someone get a stretcher.
Courtside, luxury box, upper deck. Your high-powered cotton cannon makes every section the nosebleed section.
Hit the deck!
So simple, anyone can operate it. After a background check, a training course, and a 5-day waiting period.
It only shoots T-shirts.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, marksman of the mezzanine, because we know you'll give us the shirt off your back at 180 feet per second.
Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Bud Light Beer at Isobush, St. Louis, Missouri. Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor.
Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor.
Ground beef, refried beans, guacamole, cheese, sour cream, and if there's any room left, a few shreds of lettuce.
I don't see no lettuce.
A culinary creation that baffles the human mind. A 12,000-calorie salad.
Ah, caramba.
Some may ask, is your taco salad healthy? Of course it is. It's a salad, isn't it?
You can eat that deep-fried crunchy bowl.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, conquistador of the calorie. You put the feast in fiesta.
Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor.
They come from the earth, dirty, ragged. But inside is a natural sweetness that comes from being wrapped in the earth's embrace and gently caressed by the hands of loving farmers.
Whoa. This ain't no romance novel. It's just a sweet potato.
Nature's Sweet Potato, now in McCain Super Fries. McCain, it's all good.
All righty, we are back. Once again, I want to thank Ari Gold and Zach Abramowitz from replyall.me for joining us, talking a little about their site, a little bit sports in general. And I think going forward, we're going to start a conversation between me and Iz going on during the week. You can join in. I'll send a link out to the conversation on replyall.me, so that'll be another way you all can join in. Once again, we got Twitter going. You can just tweet me at Ellie Gray for interesting things. And here's an interesting thing I saw on Twitter today that I want to get your opinion on this, because I've got a very strong one. The talk all around is where the leagues in general are going versus trying to get people into the stadium itself to watch, to pay money to come to the games with concessions and all that involves, versus TV. So in 2013, ESPN, they just ran a poll. 52% of fans prefer to watch a game on TV versus 42% who prefer to attend a game live in person. Now, is which do you prefer? Let's hear what you got to say, and then I'll give you my strong feelings on that after we
hear this. Wow. I got to give you one first quick tidbit. I've got plenty of friends from Chicago, guys that are fans of the Cubbies, the White Sox, the Bulls, all different teams. Now, there's a notorious or former notorious owner of the Chicago Blackhawks, and he decided to do something that I think is pretty scummy, but he wanted to prove a point. He blacked out the games on television because people were not showing up to the games at the stadium. It's ridiculous. I mean, if you think about it, what gives him the right to do something like that? How dare he not allow his fans to watch them on television? What if they can't make it? What if they're working? What if they don't have the ability to show up to the stadium? He wanted to prove a point. It was a failure at the end of the day, but the convenience of sitting on a couch, especially, let's look at the NFL. When you're watching a football game, it's freezing cold outside. It's 20 degrees, especially when you're out in New York, New Jersey. You want to be able to sort of relax on the couch, go to the John when you want to, and not have a bunch of drunk idiots running around pissing in garbage cans. You want to go to the fridge, take out a sandwich. You want that relaxing sort of comfort. That's, I'm not going to say the general consensus, but the average fan, that is sort of the consensus. To the diehard fan, to the guy that needs to see it live, he's going to do everything in his power to get those tickets, to get to the stadium, to get to the game. So I personally believe that it's a matter of how big a fan really are you to drive you, if you have the ability to get to the stadium, than to go to the stadium. Me personally, I love going to the stadium. I love going to Yankee Stadium. I love going to Giant Stadium. That's right, Giant Stadium, not Jet Stadium, Giant Stadium. I enjoy going to the Garden when the Knicks don't stink. I personally prefer to watch the game in the stadium because that's the way that I like to watch sports. But if I know that it's going to be 14 degrees in East Rutherford, and I'm going to be sitting 350 rows up in Giant Stadium where the wind's howling, and I'm literally, I can't even see the game because I can't even see a foot in front of me because there's like fog over my eyes. I don't know. In that situation, I might just want to watch the game at home. But you're in Florida, so we have two completely different situations. What's your opinion?
I mean, that's the thing. Here is my personal opinion. I'm exactly with you. The atmosphere that you get going to a game, you know, granted not in the middle of the season when the games don't mean anything, but when, especially in football, where no matter what, every game means something at least till halfway through, because as we all know, everyone believes that their team is going to the Super Bowl till at least week 8 when you're mathematically eliminated for some of you. But till then, every game is relevant. The atmosphere that you get at a football stadium, at a basketball when the games are relevant, baseball also, to me, the atmosphere is something you can't replace. Now, here's the thing, and I documented it, you know, the other week, the thing becomes is when you have to pay exorbitant amounts of money to do so, a la Game 7 of the Finals, in which I went to Miami, I intended to go to the game, but ticket prices were just so exorbitant, so I had to sit down there and make that decision of risk versus, you know, I'm going to say risk versus reward, but the risk of spending $600, I'll call it a risk, the out-of-pocket expense, that's a crazy amount of money versus the reward of being able to see it live, you know. And I kind of, you know, I made that decision. I ended up going to South Beach watching with at one of the bars there with, you know, 200 fans. So you still got a little bit of that experience of the fan experience together. And I think in a lot of ways that money is going to come down where you're making a decision between spending all that money to go to a game versus watching on a TV, like you said, at home, relaxing, controlling the environment on your own way. And I think a lot of people, especially in today's day and age with the economy and everything like that, are going to be making the decision to kind of, you know, stick away from it a little and, you know, maybe make it a one time a year, one time a season event of going to the game. And as you see in baseball this year, especially, all over the place, even in Yankee Stadium, you know, all the people, they're having major difficulty drawing fans to the games. You know, obviously the Marlins are always, you know, difficulty drawing unless they're winning. But the Yankees also this year, you know, you look at pictures of stadiums or video replays, highlights, and on night-to-night basis in baseball, the stands are empty. And teams, you know, you go on StubHub, and tickets, you know, for baseball for a midseason game, you can get for $3-4, you know. So it's, you know, but the big games, I think people are going to start shying away from them a little, watching in environments. I've seen lately a lot more, you know, watch parties and people throwing watch parties. So you still get some of that atmosphere type of thing going. But it's, I think, you know, right now, like the ESPN poll said, you know, it's shifting towards people watching at home and preferring to watch at home. And you're going to get a lot more people. I think, you know, that number is going to keep going up and up. And teams are struggling to try to figure it out. I read one place, I forget if it was NFL-wide or one team. I forget exactly which team. But there's talks of them showing on the big screen the NFL red zone so that, you know, the fans don't have to sacrifice that, because a lot of fans were saying, you know, why should I go to the stadium? I can watch my game on one screen, got NFL red zone, which, by the way, is one of the greatest inventions ever.
That's awesome. I love it. And I have it up here where I am in Woodridge. It's that is, by the way, that and the MLB Network are the two greatest channels ever in the history, other than, of course, the, you know, dirty channels, but we're not going to talk about that. But yeah, you know what, as far as what you brought up, the exact point, you brought up the most important point, the financial aspect, the financial dynamic. And the thought is, as you said, pay $600 to sit in the, you know, at the game, or go to a bar, enjoy it. It's not the exact same thing, but you're there with only mostly Miami Heat fans. There is that amazing atmosphere, and you could still enjoy it and look in your pocket and say, wait, I didn't blow $600. And the thought behind it is, as you said, as far as viewing parties, a guy's going to say, wait, I'm going to go, let's say, I'm going to go to Giant Stadium, let's say, three times a year, or I want to go to four games. So I'm going to average $150 a ticket. And let's be honest, Giant tickets are not cheap. So if the average ticket's $150, on four games, you're looking at $600. So the thought process is, hey, maybe I go to one game and I put the $450 towards a nice television in my den where I can watch the rest of the games in, like you said, a relaxed environment. I can go and come as I please. I can DVR it. And by the way, that is the DVR is the greatest invention for television ever. I need to go to the bathroom. I have an issue with, I don't know, diarrhea, whatever it is. I can DVR the game. I can pause it if I want to. In real time, I can pause it, do what I have to do, come back and watch it from the comfort of my couch, as opposed to going to the game where if you got the runs, you're going to miss the game. And it's a terrible feeling.
Yeah, it's, you know, the teams, like I said, they're trying their best to figure it out. The Dolphins tried, and I think they still do it. And I, you know, when I was a season ticket holder for the Dolphins, they've got this thing, Kangaroo TV, which is, you know, a company owned by the owner, Stephen Ross. So he also had some financial reasons to promote it. But it was, you know, a handheld device that they gave you that you had access to all the games on it and replays, and you could rewind and this and that. But let me tell you, I used it maybe once, twice. I don't remember even, because it was that ineffective and meaningless to me, even though they handed it out to all the season ticket holders, but no one ends up using it. It's got to, you know, the teams are going to be scrambling to try to figure out a way to get the fans more into it and more of the creature comforts that come with home in the stadium, and that's what they're trying to do. Now, quickly, here's another one of these things that I think is just stupid, but the media ran with it for a little while. It seems to have died down. Colin Kaepernick, first of all, by the way, doing this, you know, wearing a Miami Dolphins hat on the beach, and a picture got out of him doing so, and oh dear God, it was awful in the reaction that just happened.
I got to be honest, I haven't seen it. I'm sure this is more, I guess, in the Miami sports circles. I'm not sure what your opinion is exactly. I would definitely say that people are just looking for crap. They're looking for BS just to stir up. I wouldn't make much of it. Who cares? Like, what is he? Is he wearing, like, I don't know, is he wearing a Packers cap? Is he wearing, you know, a Seahawks cap? Is it? And even then, who cares? It's not like he's wearing a rival cap. He's sitting on a beach enjoying himself wearing a Dolphin cap. Who cares? Who cares? That's really what it comes down to. Who gives a crap? Where do you stand with that?
I mean, I think I agree, and I go even one better. Even if he was wearing a Seahawks cap, and even if he was wearing a Packers cap, I don't really care as long as he's performing on the field against those teams. It doesn't matter. And let me tell you something. When you take your team to the Super Bowl, that means you're performing on the field. And I really think it's stupid that fans have any sort of issue with Colin Kaepernick wearing that hat or a different hat. I mean, we had the same thing a few years back with LeBron wearing a Yankees hat, if you remember. And it's just, you know, that's the problem also is when you're, you know, comparing also, you know, players from today's day and age and yada, 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 trying to compare them, you know, that's one thing you don't take into account also is the amount of crap that these athletes have to deal with and the scrutiny that they get, which did not exist 5 years ago. It existed a lot less 10 years ago, obviously, and 15 years ago, it was non-existent. I mean, you read back on some of the things that even Jordan was doing or these players were doing beforehand that today would have been on the front page right away. You know, Twitter would have been blown up with it, but these players got away with it, so that scrutiny doesn't exist whatsoever for the players. And here's another, you know, here's a funny little story. Did you see the Cleveland Browns fan passed away and in his request was, and this is awesome. I mean, it's just hilarious. He requested that the Cleveland Browns send players so that they can be his pallbearers. So one last time they can let him down.
That was, by the way, it was so awesome. That was, I got to say, one of the funniest things, especially if you know people from Cleveland and you know that the sadness that they have gone through and the pure misery. Their franchises are just miserable. For Marty Schottenheimer and the Browns in the 80s, the Ernest Biner fumble, the LeBron thing, the Indians not having a good team, well, other than this year, even, I mean, for 15 years, it just... it's awesome. That is the way to do it. I would have said if they would have added to it, do him a favor and bury him upside down so the Browns can kiss his ass for the horrible years of football that they gave him. That would have been even better. But yeah, that was pretty epic.
Yeah, and then we'll just leave off. We got just a little bit left in the show. Thank you all for tuning in to Ramblings of a Diehard Sports Fan. We'll be back next week, same time, Wednesday night, 10:30, 11:30 Eastern Standard Time. You can call in 347-637-2306 to join us. And we thank, once again, Ari Gold and Zach Abramowitz of ReplyAll.me, the new website, ReplyAll.me. Go there, join, start conversations, follow what's going on. You can follow them on Twitter at ReplyAll.me. And their Facebook page is reply all.me as well. You can search them that way. Thank you all for joining us. The one last thing while we're talking Cleveland, did you see, you only got 15 seconds left, but Nick Swisher, foul ball up the middle. He just sits there and watches it. Very smart play by the catcher. And once again, Cleveland misery at its best. Thank you all for tuning in. Talk to you next week. Peace.
Peace.